When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Elevate your summer with Osea's best-selling body care set. It's everything you need for radiant summer skin on the go. Featuring travel sizes of Osea's clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral skincare, like their best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil. Right now, you can get the best-sellers body care set, a $78 value, 33% off. And use code SUMMER to save an additional 10%. That's an additional 10% off at OCEAMalibu.com, code SUMMER.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Manchester United begin a manic 8 days with progression to the Europa League final. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's first as United manager and a comeback victory at Aston Villa. With further protests against the Glazer ownership scheduled for Thursday night's rescheduled home game against Liverpool, there is plenty to talk about once again. Welcome back to the Manchester United Weekly Podcast, where we'll be talking a few different things. Mason Greenwood becomes United's greatest teenage scorer in Premier League history. Edinson Cavani hits a fifth goal off the bench of the season. Bruno Fernandes matches a Frank Lampard record and comes close to equaling Robin van Persie's one-season tally of 30 goals. In the middle of the show, you'll get your youth loan and women's roundup as Casey Stoney's side wrap up their season by finishing fourth. The under-18s hit eight against Middlesbrough and the under-23s gear up for another game against Derby County. Jack, let's start with Villa. 10 times we've come from behind to win this season now, picking up a quite ridiculous 31 points from losing positions. And it is a league record. We've said it so many times, we can't keep doing this, and yet we do. We keep doing it time and time again. What we can say is what the players and the coaching staff say as well, is that this isn't an ideal situation to be in. Nevertheless, it shows good character and good ability to respond to these situations when it does happen time and time again.
Without a doubt, it's not something that I think we or the players and staff want to keep repeating. I'm sure there's been, you know, numerous conversations within Carrington, within the squad, about how we can stop starting games so poorly. And to be fair, against Villa, actually, it was one of our better starts in away games, especially. Yeah. We did dominate the game, and Villa's goal really came from nothing. We could have been 1-2-0 up after 10, 15 minutes. So this was a little different. I can't remember after which game, but after a game not so long ago, that I'm just going to stop saying that we can't keep doing this, because I've been saying that all season and thought that the luck would, I mean, I don't even think it's luck actually, but thought that the run would catch up to us eventually, and it doesn't show any signs of doing so. So maybe next season will be when that happens, but I'm just going to stop worrying about it for now. You have to give credit to the team. It yet again showed a lot of calmness, I think, under pressure. And I think actually there was a lot of pressure on this game, you know, despite the fact that Leicester and Spurs both had poor results on Friday and Saturday, respectively. Going into this game, I think we were under quite a lot of pressure. You know, there is, I think, at halftime in the Villa game being 1-0 down, there was a not too unrealistic scenario that we would be dragged back into a fight for third and fourth, with Chelsea playing very, very well. West Ham was still to play after us. If West Ham had won their game, you know, I think we would have only been 3 or 4 points above fourth place at that point. So the fight would have been very, very close at that point, and a very different story to what we're seeing now. So full credit to the team for staying calm and for coming out and putting in a very, very good second half performance.
Yeah, I think what's also important is having lost to Roma, and we'll talk about that game a little bit later, but having lost to Roma, we were then faced with the scenario where, as you say, I think we actually started well, we started brightly, and we should have scored in that
early period of domination, we had enough chances to do so. And then we go behind to a screamer from Traore, but also poor defending from a whole string of players. But we were in a scenario at halftime where we're looking at losing two games in a row, then knowing that we're going to have to rest players and put out a quite significantly weakened 11 against Leicester, potentially lose that. Then you're looking at three, and then suddenly you're against Liverpool, who remain a very good team. And it's a derby and a crucial match. And you're thinking four losses in a row. This is a United team that hasn't really lost this season. Three of our Premier League losses, there's been four in total, came in the first, I think, five or six games to Palace, Spurs, and I forget the third one. And then Sheffield United recently, and there's been other defeats. There's been defeat to Leicester City in the FA Cup, to Manchester City in the League Cup semi-final. But as a United fan, I think this will translate to the playing staff as well. We've got into a situation where losing feels very strange. And so obviously the Roma game was in and of itself a defeat, but in the wider context of things didn't matter. We haven't had that gutting feeling of defeat except for Leicester and Sheffield United really in kind of 5 months. So then you're thinking two losses in a row, including an important game in the Premier League, that's going to have a mental impact.
Yeah, I mean, we've lost two games in the Premier League since November the 1st against Arsenal. You know, I think we actually kind of lose sight of that in some ways because we've been on this such a great run and it feels normal. And despite the fact that we've been on such a great run, you know, we've had some disappointing results, some disappointing draws. The performances haven't always been, you know, at their best.
Yeah.
But I mean, losing once in the league since November and we're now in the middle of May is quite a serious achievement.
Yeah, it is. I do want to talk about, because this week it's really felt like, it's interesting because the first half of the season, you're looking at two players without a doubt who have carried United, and that would be Marcus Rashford and Bruno Fernandes, who consistently dragged United over the line in games where we were poor or were kind of centre to a good team performance. Both of them have faded slightly due to injury, fatigue, but also just out of form, and that's fine. Obviously, it's important as a team to have those substitutes to come in. I think if you look at this season, the arc of this season has been Bruno and Rashford were the key players for the first 4 or 5 months. When they fell out of form, it kind of fell upon Luke Shaw to be the side's main creator and also a defensive linchpin at the back. Now, the last 3 weeks, I guess since the win against Spurs, where Cavani had the air of a man who felt very aggrieved by a first half and just dominated a second half, which was incredibly satisfying. Since then, it's been Cavani, El Matador, and Mason Greenwood, the apprentice, the kid who have stepped up. And I think that's kind of been my feeling of the last 2 weeks, is those two are at the centre of, or should be at the centre of discussion about United. And they've been fantastic to watch. The contrast in their styles is massive, but you do get the sense that Greenwood is learning off Cavani, and you see it with some of his runs and some of his attacking actions. But Cavani is just, I think everyone's just in love with him, aren't they?
They are, and rightly so, to be honest. The person I'd add to that group with Cavani and Greenwood would also be Paul Pogba as well. I think he's been, you know, massively, massively influential in the last few months, really since that Milan second leg. You know, he has been one of the key cogs driving us forward. But no, I mean, Cavani has been, you know, he's been phenomenal. There's no other word for it. I remember I saw a compilation yesterday, I think about Bruno Fernandes actually, and it included his assist to Cavani for his first goal for United at Goodison Park way back in, would have been September, October, I imagine. And I remember thinking then, and when he'd come on a few times in games, not been given a huge amount of chances, and I think we were all a little bit worried that this could be another sort of Falcao situation, a striker that we all love and want to succeed, but it doesn't quite work out. And then to think what we thought about that signing then, and, you know, I think most of us thought that it was a bit of a panic signing and probably wouldn't contribute that much to the team this season. To now, I think where we are today in May 10th, as we're recording this, that he is arguably alongside Fernandes and Maguire, probably maybe our most important player at the moment. We look a completely different side when he's on the pitch.
Yeah.
And I mean, the movement that he produces week in, week out is unbelievable. I think his goal against Villa was a perfect summation of Edinson Cavani as a striker.
Yeah.
He's not actually, I don't think, the best finisher you'll see.
No,
he misses quite a lot of good
Roma
chances.
Was an example.
Yeah,
of that.
Exactly. I mean, same thing against Villa in the build up to his goal. You know, he missed. He completely scuffed an effort from Pogba when he got the ball out on the left. But it's then the way he reacts and that movement for Rashford's cross. I mean, he's moving, making that run across Matty Cash before Rashford has even taken a first touch to get the ball out of his feet. And he can see the run. He can see the ball that needs to be played. That's
and
the
also
difference,
it just,
I think. And it summed up his game.
It just
perfectly.
Makes Rashford's mind up for him. Rashford doesn't then have to look up and pause and think or whatever. He just sees the run and he knows he has to play the ball because he knows if that ball's right, it's going on to Cavani's head. And I was actually watching just before we recorded BT Sport, and I think Rio Ferdinand was hosting a conversation with Rashford and Rooney about United's past and present, and they were analysing some of his goals, and they were showing the clip of Rashford assisting Mason Greenwood against Liverpool, the massive crossfield ball in the FA Cup. Can't remember which round, I guess fourth round. That Hollywood diagonal ball across the thing, and Rashford actually said that's kind of simple. And he'd be really annoyed with himself if he couldn't make that pass because that's a really simple goal. It's just one pass and then Greenwood's got a one-on-one chance to finish. And he said, in training, you'd make that pass 10 out of 10 times. So if you're not making it in a match, you're going to be fuming with yourself. And I think that's what's interesting. I then thought about the Cavani goal against Villa and you think, well, again, you just need to find Cavani's head. And for a footballer of Rashford's quality, and this is him saying it himself, he knows he has to make that pass or that cross, whatever you want to call it. And so it does become simple. If Cavani can have that just world-class level of movement, the game becomes simpler for the people playing around him. And he's just a joy to watch. But also, he would have that level of adoration at Old Trafford. And this is why we'll come on to his future. But it seems like he's going to be staying for another year, a decision which didn't look like it would be the case a few weeks ago. It seems like he'll be sticking around. And I'm just so pleased because I think as football fans, we turn back into kids when we see a great number nine.
Yeah.
It's different with other players, I think, but everyone knows that number nines are so hard to come by, and watching a good number nine, that it's such an art form, and Cavani just does it so well. And I think it makes, when he's playing well, and this is, I mean, we're so fickle. A few weeks ago, we were thinking, oh, he's got his head, he's thinking about Boca Juniors already and he's not playing well enough. And I think before that Spurs game, everyone would be saying, well, he's not really putting the effort in here. Obviously, we didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. And then suddenly this eruption of form at the perfect time when Fernandes is dropped off, when Rashford is still contributing, but not in the same way. It's fantastic. And now you think, now he is the Matador.
He is. And it's funny, the arc that we've all gone through, I think, with Cavani. Like I said, back in September, October, I mean, I saw a poll on Twitter the other day from way back when he signed, and admittedly, this wasn't United fans, but he was voted the worst signing of the summer. And although we weren't like, in the Premier League, and although we weren't, you know, subscribing to that, I think, theory on him, I think a lot of us were slightly surprised and not particularly optimistic. I remember we having conversations, Harry, saying that, yeah, you know, Cavani's a good striker, will probably help this season, but it's a bit of a red flag that it's, you know, being a free agent the entire summer and no other team was in for him. And it's funny how that arc has moved since then. I think the first couple of months, I was certainly worried, and I think a lot of United fans were worried that this was going to turn into another signing that looked great on paper and it's a player we all wanted to succeed but wasn't actually going to come off. He then, you know, started to put in a few good performances here and there, obviously the Southampton away game being the big one where he completely dragged us back into that game.
Yeah.
And then we all wanted him to start every week, and it started to happen when Martial got injured, and there were some good performances but still inconsistent around sort of February, March. But it's really the last 6 weeks or so he has just taken over this team. He really has, and he's started to take over games. And I think there's something so glorious about watching a number nine with the movement that Cavani has, because like you said, he forced Rashford to put it there, really, in that situation against Villa. And it's happened numerous times this season. It was the same, his goal against Southampton, the winning goal, reminded me of it as well, because you could see him making that run across the defender. And it was Rashford on that occasion too. You knew where Rashford had to put the ball. And it's a joy to watch as a fan when you watching, whether in the stadium or on TV, you can see where the player needs to put the ball because Cavani makes it so obvious. It's not as if it takes someone with the vision of Bruno Fernandes or Kevin De Bruyne to find the pass. Yeah. Cavani just makes it so obvious, but the movement is so good, it's impossible to defend, and it makes the picture so clear for both the players and the fans. And there is something amazing about watching that happen.
I think. We better move on to Mason Greenwood in a second, but there's just an absolutely outstanding piece in the latest United We Stand by CT. It's the front page of the magazine, and it's 100% worth buying this issue just for it. And I don't want to nick too much of it because it's so good and you need to go and read it. But it just talks about Cavani just being this just incredible man and how there's this manliness to him without managing to creep into the usual toxic masculine bullshit. And he'd host a brilliant barbecue in Asado, and he'd be pulling out cold beers and have his kind of leather apron on. And there's one description of him which calls him an Italian underwear model crossed with an Easter Island statue. It's very easy to just become obsessed with Cavani because he has that kind of air of, that mysterious air about him of a proper number nine, a Cantona-esque mystique about him. But Mason Greenwood, maybe kind of the opposite, really. The teenager who is, I mean, if you think about his season, started off under a massive pressure for what was undoubtedly a mistake on England duty, but was basically thrown under the bus by Gareth Southgate, who didn't really protect him and Phil Foden enough, in my opinion. Solskjaer did his best, but couldn't comment on it for a while, even though I think, you know, it could have done more on that front. But they've since protected him fantastically. He also had the personal loss of a friend, ex-Manchester City Academy player who passed away. And then had not the most amazing form in the United team that wasn't playing very well, but has since started to, I mean, I think it's 11 goals for the season now for Mason. And that's another very good return. And this is two full seasons in the United team, two very solid returns. And we said, I don't know how many weeks ago now, because time has lost all sense of value in the last year. But we were saying after certain games a few weeks ago that it was only a matter of time before Greenwood's goals were coming, because you could see him, his involvement in general play had just improved so much. And now it is turning into goals, which he's fully deserved. And I mean, just what an absolute star boy. The greatest teenage goal scorer in United's Premier League history. That's some achievement.
I remember exactly when that discussion was, that we were saying that Greenwood's performances were good and the goals would come. It was just before the defeat to Leicester in the FA Cup, because he did end up scoring in that game. And it was just before that when we'd been saying the performances are there. You know, Greenwood's general play was very good. He was getting himself into very good positions. He looked much more confident and comfortable on the ball. He was having a much bigger influence on games in the lead up to that Leicester defeat. That was when he finally got his goal, and then we went on the international break, and he's come back from that international break and just absolutely hit the ground running. I mean, he's been sensational. He really has. And I think what's great to see about Greenwood is just how many different types of goals he's starting to score. You know, every week there's something different from him, whether it's being a bit more of a classic number nine and being a bit more of a poacher, or this classic low backlift shot that he's completely mastered now. I mean, that is his trademark already. I think we love players that have trademarks in their play. For me, with Rooney, it was always cutting in from the left and looking like he's going to shape it to the far post and dragging it back to the near post. He scored so many goals like that, catching keepers out. Whether it was Van Persie and the silky way that he struck the ball and his sort of finesse in the way that he played. For Greenwood, it is already this ability to just shoot ridiculously early in a lot of cases. I mean, the Aston Villa goal wasn't as early as some of the other shots that he's taken, but even then he was off balance. Most strikers would have taken another touch and allowed the defender to get back tight to him, but as soon as he gets half a yard of space, he wants to take on a shot.
Yeah,
and it's a wonderful, wonderful trait to have, because it not only catches goalkeepers by surprise, and so therefore it means their positioning isn't great, just like Emi Martinez for his goal against Villa. But it also means they're much more likely to spill the ball. And it almost happened in the first half that one of Greenwood's shots, really from an angle where I don't think many players would have shot, he was running down the side of the defence But Martinez parried it. It hits Konsa and almost went in for a goal, and Pogba was almost there for the rebound. Yeah. It's those kind of moments that Greenwood's willingness to shoot creates. I mean, he's just fun to watch, isn't he? And really, when we think about what football is, why we love it, we want to have fun. We want to be entertained and enjoy watching it. And there are a few players that are more fun to watch for me than Mason Greenwood.
Yeah, and he celebrates with the air of a kid who just has always lived United and is loving scoring goals. And that's exactly, it's not exclusive to academy graduates, but there is, celebrations go up a notch when it's a kind of a long, lifelong United supporter scoring the goals, whether it's Odinogalo coming and joining at 31 or Mason Greenwood coming through at 17, 18, 19, it's still the same. But I think that ability to shoot early, as far as I am aware, is just from playing up age groups throughout his career or throughout his youth career. Someone who knew the family told me that his dad used to take him to cages in Moss Sides just so he'd get kicked the shit out of, which means you just have to shoot earlier. And then United managed him really well. We spoke about this in the making of Mason Greenwood special we did last summer, which you can go back and listen to if you haven't already. But in there, it talks about, playing in cages in Moss Side at United. Paul McGuinness and Tony Whelan and coaches like that always encouraged plays inside the cage. And so you'd get kids like Marcus Rashford playing with a few years above, like Jesse Lingard and Paul Pogba, as well as kids a few years below, like Mason Greenwood. And that carries on and on, which is partly why the relationships between age groups are good, but also means, as well as the kind of sanitized football development you get on a really pristine pitch at United's Carrington training ground and indoors at the Cliff, you also get this more street football thing where you are forced to shoot early. You're forced to cut out the needless skills and to introduce the ones that will get you past the man. And that is what you see with most of the players that come through the United Academy. And that's that mixture. And I know it's something that Nick Cox, who's head of Academy now, and has been for a couple of years, also thinks about, and Nicky Butt, who's now left. But the philosophy at United is making sure you've got that mix of sanitized youth football, but also still those elements of street football. And I think Greenwood is testament to the benefits of that, in that trademark early finish, as you've explained, the benefits of it is fantastic. And just to wrap up on our two strikers who are in form, Cavani coming to Mason Greenwood support in Italy against Roma just filled me with joy. And it made me think, because Greenwood's just a little bit younger than me, or just over a year younger than me. And I just thought, having grown up watching Edinson Cavani for Napoli and for PSG, imagine being Mason Greenwood and you're playing in the Europa League in the Stadio Olimpico. And then you look behind you and you've got into a little bit of a pickle, and Edinson Cavani is charging over to come to your defence. That would be something pretty special.
Yeah, I mean, it felt almost like a lion protecting their cub, you know, when they've sort of wandered off somewhere. It was a really joyous moment.
Yeah.
I mean, Cavani, that is sort of what he's like, isn't it? He is a bit of a lion, I think, in the way that he plays the game. And
I think Cavani for me is... 150 years ago, Cavani would be astride a noble steed as a gaucho in Uruguay, strolling around the Uruguayan countryside. And he'd be the kind of man who could stroll around the whole of Uruguay and draw respect from all people he encountered.
That sounds like a great idea for a movie, how you should pitch that to Cavani after he retires.
Yeah. What I also love about that pairing is, I hope we look back in a few years' time when Greenwood's hitting 30 goals a season and think this was his mentor, and that Cavani's had another great season at United and won a couple of trophies. Yeah. But I love the fact that Cavani doesn't speak English. He will now have picked up certain elements, but Greenwood and Rashford, and Greenwood spoke about this after the game as well, him, Rashford, Amad Diallo as well, and I imagine Shuatire and a few of the others are all learning from Cavani, and yet this guy doesn't speak the same language. So he is basically just teaching them just through what he does. And I mean, that happens with all sorts of players and at every club, is people pick up things. So much of kind of football mentoring is not done through words and through instructions and through video analysis. It is just done by watching them. And Greenwood said he just, like, he came off on Sunday against Villa, Cavani replaced him, and he just got to watch Cavani playing. And that is completely invaluable. But it is an interesting part of that relationship that he doesn't speak English, and it is all just through watching him do his stuff. We should wrap up on the Villa game. There's not much to say about the Roma game other than, I mean, the two things to say in terms of bigger picture, United have qualified for have finished in the top four again. That is now confirmed after Everton beat West Ham with that Calvert-Lewin goal a little bit later than United beat Villa. So top four finish confirmed. I think if we get 4 points from the next two, then second place will be confirmed. And that comes
and
4 days
still
off.
Still on, importantly.
Well, yeah, just about. but this all comes 4 days after we get into our first final under Solskjaer. So a good week.
Yeah, a good week. You know, we'll do, of course, a much longer episode focusing on the Europa League final, but I don't want it to go amiss just how big of a moment that felt as well at the end of that game on Thursday. Obviously, we ended up losing on the night.
It was pretty nervy, wasn't it?
It was at one point. I mean, seeing the first 10 minutes or so, even before the goal started going in, like, Roma came out like a house on fire and we really went at the races. And to be honest, we have a lot to thank David De Gea for making
that.
Oh,
yeah, we should mention that. Yeah, fantastic.
A slightly easier tie. He made some fantastic saves.
Yeah. There was that 10-minute period. They'd already scored one, and then they should have scored one immediately after. They scored another, and then they should have scored another two or three. And I don't know, some of them were great saves. Yeah. Some of them were pure
luck.
They
had a couple, like the Dzeko one, I think, that literally just hit De Gea, like from point.
And then not only hit De Gea,
you know, if that goes in,
but then it comes off his leg and just squeezes past the post. And you think, oh my God, this suddenly, we would have suddenly been in a position where we're leading by two. And then you're thinking, wow, this could be 2018 Roma Barcelona all over again. But it was nervy, but De Gea was brilliant. Yeah, I think that was really important performance for him as well in a big game. It was very like Mourinho United, that defensive
really
mistakes
was
all over the pitch. De Gea saving us and us playing badly, but getting to a final was very, very kind of a few years ago reminiscent of.
And it's just wonderful to know that we're in our first final under Solskjaer as well. You know, like I said, we'll do a bigger episode looking ahead to that after the Premier League season is done. But just what a brilliant feeling that is. And I think I came away from the Villa game as well, just feeling like, despite the fact we're far from a perfect team, but it's so nice to watch United and be so confident that we're watching a team heading in the right direction. And almost every game now, some of the football that we play going forward is unbelievably good. I mean, some of the patterns of play that we have, especially down the left-hand side with Shaw, Pogba, Fernandes and Cavani getting involved, some of the interplay we have is so good.
Yeah.
We move the ball so quickly when we're playing well. It's a joy to watch, honestly. I think, thinking back to where we were a few months ago, I can't give Solskjaer enough credit for what he's done in the second half of this season.
Well, I think a lot of it is, that is one of the big things of the last few weeks, is the variation to United's play. And I think that's why it was so frustrating when the goal against Spurs was ruled out, because that was clearly something they'd worked on in the training ground. And then we saw it replicated, I can't remember which goal, but we saw it then replicated again. Maybe it was the Bruno Fernandes opener against Roma. It might have been. But there is clearly, we've asked for it before. We wanted to see a variation in United's attacking patterns of play, and we are now seeing it. I think it's partly to do with the individuals on the pitch. That Pogba-Shaw relationship is brilliant, and it seems we somehow haven't mentioned, but they were both brilliant against Villa. Shaw's touch is so good and so confident at the moment, and it makes such a difference. Pogba was excellent as well. But I think it's partly to do with the individuals, like Pogba coming back and having an excellent spell of form, as well as Cavani becoming the main striker, and that provides so much else. Because before, and I don't think it's a bad thing to do this, but before we were kind of quite reliant on that diagonal ball from the left to the right winger, or to the left winger to the striker, to then run on. And if there wasn't space, then we really found it hard. Now we are seeing some of that variety, and it's partly personnel, but I guess there are some things you can only do with certain personnel, if we're being generous. And we were kind of waiting for Pogba to come back, because Pogba, as we've always said, is the only other player apart from Bruno who can play those passes to that the wingers and the strikers want.
Well, what I've really noticed recently is that having Pogba in the team as a left midfielder also allows us to play Fred and McTominay in midfield and get everything that they offer us defensively, but it doesn't sacrifice quite as much in going forward because we have another player on the pitch who is very good and very assured on the ball and can help us build attacks. Yeah. You know, if you go back to having Rashford on the left, Fred and McTominay in midfield, and then say Dan James on the right, we always said the problem with that Fred and McTominay midfield, as good as they are defensively, is that they're not very good at launching us on attacks just because sort of their ability on the ball isn't quite as good as the likes of Pogba or even Matic for that matter. But with Pogba in the team, so it's just slightly further forward, we still have that great ability to launch attacks and from Luke Shaw as well. And it means that we don't sacrifice quite as much in midfield because as great as Rashford and Dan James or Greenwood or whoever would be playing on the right are at sort of finishing attacks and getting us into scoring positions, because they aren't quite as assured on the ball, they're such direct players, when we're trying to actually get ourselves into a good attacking position, that's not their game. And so having Pogba in the team offers us another player who can do that. The balance of the team is so good at the moment.
You know what I think it is? The balance of the team has actually been helped massively by Martial's injury. And it would be nice to have him as an option. But the team does just pick itself at the moment in a few different forms. You can go with a few different things, but you're having to leave fewer attackers out, which means you can just always have Pogba either on the left or the right, given the option.
And you're having to shoehorn people into holes that they don't really fit a bit less, I think. But the other thing I was going to say was, I mean, how many times we've been doing this podcast, what, six years now? 5 years? 5 years. And how many times in those 5 years have we sat here and said, you know, United are an okay team, but we don't have a coherent system that we play when we attack?
Yeah.
Almost every week, especially for the last sort of 3 years, we did somewhat under Van Gaal, which just wasn't a very good system. But I mean, how many times in the last 3 years have we said that we needed a system of attacking football? And I don't think it's all the way there just yet, but we're getting there. And we look so much more, we're not just as reliant on players as I think we were even a few months ago. We're not just waiting for Fernandes to do something great. What we're seeing now on the pitch is patterns of play that are so good. The interplay between, especially between like Pogba, Shaw, Cavani, Fernandes, Rashford, Greenwood, the movement, the quick passing, it's so, so good. And I think that is, to me, the best thing that could come out of the end of this season is to take that forward. Because to me, that's the more sustainable kind of piece of attacking football that we can take into next season, rather than, you know, just give the ball to Bruno 50 times a game and hope that he does something magical once or twice.
Yeah, we are going to, I said we'd wrap up ages ago, but we haven't. But we'll move on to you, Flo, in a second. But the thing about sustainability is interesting because when we do look back at this United season, we will do after the Europa League final, whatever the result is, it will be quite hard to decide what United are, because all throughout the season, I mean, results were inconsistent at the start of the season, then they picked up some consistency, then we dropped off a little bit, and now we're coming back and we're coming back into form, but also coming back in games all the time. It's hard to tell what is by design in this United team and what has kind of been an on-the-cuff tweak halfway through the season. And so there will still be lots of questions going into next season, because it's quite, from a wider season perspective, it's quite hard to know what this United team is and what was planned and what has kind of been a little bit of an accident. And so that is an interesting thing to bear in mind. The final thing I'll say, and then we'll go on to Youth Loan and Women's Roundup, and then we'll very briefly preview the Leicester and Liverpool games. I mentioned the BT Sport thing with Rooney and Rashford earlier, and Ferdinand, and Rashford was talking about how Solskjaer's been working with him and Greenwood and the others about that diagonal ball over the top. And it made me think, with Cavani looking like he's going to be staying, you suddenly have the option of a 4-3-3 at United with Rashford and Greenwood on the right, possibly Martial, all three of whom can play that diagonal ball over the top pretty consistently, all three of whom can make that run pretty consistently, probably Rashford and Greenwood more so than Martial. And then you'd have the movement of Cavani in the middle, and you'd have Cavani waiting in the box. plus the potential option of Van der Beek, who's very good at arriving in the box late on and being in that space. And then suddenly you've got that option of a 4-3-3, which hasn't been quite so obvious before. But with that pattern of play where one winger diagonally crosses it for the other, that so we've seen Solskjaer's loved it the whole time, but we're really seeing it more and more now. And Rashford saying that they're working on it a lot. You do suddenly think maybe that's the future of this United team. Maybe that's what Solskjaer's planning for, to have that proper number nine, two kind of wingers come strikers who play that ball between them a lot, plus a solid midfield, which we don't have at the moment. And that's the problem. The midfield is where you need that a change for that to be able to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we've said, you know, all throughout the season, that central midfield, I think we've seen has become a more and more important part of what we need to improve and hopefully bring in players for over the summer. Now, I think that is, I said how good the balance of the team feels at the moment, and it does, but I think that the midfield is the one area where the balance could still be, I think, quite significantly improved, because as good as Fred and McTominay are, and they are a very good partnership, they work very, very well together, they are very clearly limited in what they can do going forward. And that isn't necessarily an issue when we have such great players around them at the moment, but, you know, again, we're a couple of injuries away from Fred and McTominay being the midfield partnership that is not only needed to sort of get about as much as they can and be combative and win us the ball, but also be the midfield pairing who are responsible for putting us into good attacking positions, which they're not quite as good at. So, you know, it's all a work in progress the whole season. And so I think we're at a point where we have the most settled lineup we've probably had all year, and maybe for 2 or 3 years before that. And now we're at a point, I think, where it's just small adjustments that need to happen, and it's about getting the right profile of player in those positions, and central midfield being one of them.
Yeah, I think it's why for me, that kind of brilliant holding midfielder is my number one priority. And I know other people say right winger, some people even say centre back or right back or striker, but for me, it then gives you that option for that 4-3-3 where you have Pogba and Fernandes in front of a great holding midfielder who you can rely on. And then you have that brilliant front line of Rashford, Cavani, Greenwood, with Greenwood to come in the middle and Martial to come in for Cavani when necessary, because he obviously won't be playing every game and perhaps not even every week next season. But we'll talk about this more at a later point in the season. Let's go to youth loan and women's roundup, and then we're going to look ahead to Leicester and Liverpool very quickly. The under-18s finished their Premier League season in fantastic fashion this weekend, hitting 8 past Middlesbrough. Charlie McNeil and Dylan Hoogeverth both scored hat-tricks, while the other goals came from Spaniard Alejandro Garnacho and midfielder Zidane Iqbal. The under-23s played Derby last Monday, winning 6-2, and they host the Rams again tonight. We're recording Monday afternoon for reference, so we'll see what the result is of that as they wrap up their season 2. A good season for the under-23s, a mixed one I'd say. A lot of high-scoring games and an entertaining team, certainly. A few obvious weaknesses that we might talk more in our season review in the next few weeks. In loan news, Ethan Laird's season didn't end in perfect fashion. Subbed off due to injury as MK Dons finished 13th in League One. His manager spoke highly of him afterwards, though, as he always has done in his spell there since January. I think United will be looking to loan Ethan Laird to a championship side for next season. James Garner's time at Nottingham Forest ended with a bang, the midfielder rifling one home after 17 minutes, but Forest did lose 2-1 to Preston and so finished 17th in the championship, but a fantastic spell at Forest for Garner. Facundo Pellistri returned to action for Deportivo Alaves, first time he's played in a few weeks because of injury. He played 23 minutes in a 2-2 draw with Levante. Andreas Pereira was sent off late on for Lazio in a 2-0 defeat to Fiorentina in Serie A. He only came on in the 63rd minute, so that was disappointing. Ella Toon and Jackie Grunen scored for United Women in the 6th and 89th minute respectively, as United missed out on a top 3 finish despite beating Everton this weekend. That means they also miss out on Champions League qualification, even if Chelsea, who won the WSL, even if Chelsea win the Champions League, which they are in the final of. United miss out in the end by only 1 point and significant goal difference, Arsenal finishing 3rd, City 2nd and Chelsea top. Disappointing for Casey Stoney's side, who called it a personal failure that the team missed out. Okay, Leicester Tuesday, 6 p.m, Liverpool Thursday, 8:15 p.m. More protests expected outside of the Lowry Hotel, where the United team stayed before the Liverpool game, so we'll see if that game is played. I think the intention is to try and make sure it's not, so that'll keep your eyes open and your ears, because there will be some news I expect on Thursday evening when that second protest is scheduled to take place. But Leicester, I expect Solskjaer will be going with almost a completely different 11. So De Gea will probably come back into the team. The concern, I think, for me is most in terms of the fullbacks. I think the midfield is a bit of a problem, but I guess basically the team I expect is De Gea, Williams, Tuanzebibai, Telles, Fred and Matic, and then James van der Beek and Greenwood. Greenwood came off at 65 minutes, so I expect he'll play again. Rashford played the whole game, so I expect he won't. But on the other hand, he didn't play in Rome for that long. So it's quite hard to tell, but I'm expecting probably 8 changes.
Yeah, I think effectively the Leicester game will be treated probably a bit like a League Cup game, to be honest, in very wholesale changes, I think. And to be honest, I don't know what else Solskjaer's supposed to do. We obviously haven't done an episode, I don't think, since the new schedule was announced. But I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous that the Premier League can think
unnecessary.
They can give us 3 games in 5 days. Especially when Liverpool had, you know, there was an easy way you could have done this and just move West Brom v Liverpool, which is happening this upcoming weekend, move that game to Wednesday and then put Liverpool United on Sunday or Saturday this weekend. You know, it just didn't make any sense to do it this way, but this is the situation we're in. I'd expect minimum 6 or 7 changes. I think there'll be very few players. I don't think there'll be anyone actually who plays all 3 games, both Villa, Leicester and Liverpool. I don't think there'll be anyone that survives all 3. I just don't think there's any way that you can expect anyone to do that. Maybe someone will start all 3 if they come off sort of 45, 60 minutes, but I doubt it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. A chance for a few players. The problem is the team will probably be quite disjointed. Also, the problem is because this has only kind of been announced in the last week, it's not like we've been able to have a separate team working on the training ground together, getting ready for this game. That just won't have been possible because half of the players would have been traveling. There is no training day between the Villa game and the Leicester game. It's just a day of recovery. And Solskjaer has said he won't know its lineup until a few hours before the game because he's entirely reliant on sports scientists to tell him who's available to play and how many minutes and who is not. So it is farcical. You just hope that we can maybe get lucky and get a decent result. But the chances are we don't. And if we don't, then okay, maybe that helps Liverpool not get into the top 4 and then we can go and give it all against Liverpool and hopefully win that game. A little hard to give predictions for this one, so I think we'll stay clear of them. But it just a crazy week. I mean, so many United games, even just as a fan, I can't imagine what it's like as a player and a coaching staff. But we'll see how things pan out. For Jack's reactions on those games, you can find him on Twitter at
UTDTate, T-A-I-T.
And you can find me on Twitter at HarryRobinson64 and the podcast itself at UTD Weekly Pod. That's P-O-D at the end there. And that's where you can find out information about how to sign up to become a patron of the podcast and get bonus episodes and bonus Q&As as well. But until Friday, when we'll probably record after the Leicester and Liverpool games, hopefully with United having secured second place and maybe a plucky win against Leicester and a deserved win against Liverpool is what we can hope for. We'll speak to you then. Have a great week. Goodbye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.